good investigation, good interviewing is not quick, it's not cheap, and it certainly can't be done on a whim. For me, it's important that good practitioners are informed by an evolving picture of research, but also are reflective in their practice and to think about how that research applies, and also consider what's next. Where am I? What do I want to achieve in my practice next? If you set out in an investigation trying to prove that somebody's guilty instead of searching for the truth or searching for facts that happen, that to me is not a good level of practice and culture.
Hello and welcome back to the AOCPP podcast. My name is Steve Myers and I'm the Vice Chair of the AOCPP as well as your host for today. In today's episode, I'll be talking to Dr. Rob Ewan from Cumbria Police about interviewing practices in policing. We'll be discussing why it's important, the research behind it, and how these lessons can be applied to other sectors within child protection and adult safeguard. But before we start, Rob, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, thank you for the introduction. I'm currently the head of training for Cumbria Police, and I fulfill that role as a detective inspector, even though I currently am wearing a uniform, which is a slight contradiction in terms. But my background prior to coming into this role was in child protection work, safeguarding, and investigating various different types of offences, I suppose, that come across the desk of a detective sergeant. My other arm, I suppose, to mention is obviously I've got a PhD, and in that I examined some of the relationships that vulnerable people have in the criminal justice system, particularly those who are granted special measures for criminal proceedings, and how really the interactions of law enforcement with those people had an impact from interviewing to the actual measure that could be applied in court. So I have, a varied background in sort of application of research and also the research itself. And at the moment, I get to put that into practice across various different streams of work, whether it's new officers or our existing detective cohort who require obviously that bit of a specialist input.
Thanks, Rob. That's really helpful to hear your practice and your research background as well, and that's really useful for us to understand where you're coming from. So just moving on to some of the questions that I'd like to ask you about interviewing. Why do you think the correct approach to interviewing is so important in policing?
I guess the answer to this is about what you see in policing as having integrity. If you look back at when the police began and what they were intended to do, they were first of all a prevention arm designed to suppress criminal activity and all these kinds of things. And it eventually grew that the police needed to investigate things, and along came the detective branch. And people will know, you know, the 1960s, 70s and 80s, and particularly up to the introduction of the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, there was a number of different practices in policing around interviewing that were much less desirable, in fact, very less desirable than the ones that we have now. Measures or things such as, you know, the suppression of a person in interview, the repeated questioning of a person for a repeated period of time, the inappropriate questioning of a child, perhaps the leading of a witness down a certain path. And these things have an impact on policing integrity and also the legitimacy of what the police are trying to achieve. I'd like to think that obviously in the 2000s and moving forward, that we actually have a really strong research-informed process around interviewing. But at times, people still, I think, see or feel that police interviews are designed to be perhaps informed by the media and television, perhaps designed to be oppressive, designed to ask repeated questions, designed to challenge a person in a confrontational style, when in fact they are about trying to find the truth in whatever matter it is, whether this is from a witness, a victim, or indeed a suspect. The principles really are about the same. So why is the correct approach important? And this is about police legitimacy around their investigations.
That's really helpful, Rob. Thanks. And interested to hear that development of police approaches to interviewing as well. We mentioned outside here that I used to be an appropriate adult in my role as a social worker some years ago. And that was part of that process of change that the police went through following the Police and Criminal Evidence Act. So you mentioned research. You've been an active and highly active researcher yourself, Rob. Why is the research around this issue so vital to the work of interviewing?
Yeah, sometimes in policing, you can repeat the same thing over and over again, expecting the result to be different. And for the people who recognise that sort of definition, it's the definition of insanity. So if you want to move beyond a position, then first of all, what you have to do is identify what the position is and then decide where you want to move to. And for me, that process is done through research, constantly evolving what you are trying to achieve through a process of evaluation, recognizing why things are wrong, or perhaps not necessarily wrong, but could be improved. If, for example, you think about the interviewing of children and the introduction of achieving best evidence interviews being recorded on video, this was so that children didn't necessarily have to go into court. And you would record it and play these things, and this will be better. But actually, there is a whole lot more to it than just that. You've got to think about how you engage the child before the video even goes on. What is the best way to do this? Is this through play? What type of play? How do we engage a victim who's been traumatized over a number of years? And practitioners, and I can say this because I am one, practitioners cannot answer this question alone. They have to rely on professional knowledge from psychology, from education, from legal backgrounds in order to really understand the problem and move it forward. Which brings me to a point that if you don't really understand the problem that you're trying to address, then you can't really move it forward with any type of meaningful research because you don't know what you're asking. This is why, for me, it's important that good practitioners are informed by an evolving picture of research, but also are reflective in their practice and to think about how that research applies and also consider what's next. Where am I? What do I want to achieve in my practice next?
That's really interesting, Rob. Thanks for that. And I think leading on from that, and certainly you're heading up a training unit in the police force that you're with, what are some of the approaches being taken to train police officers in good interviewing practices?
Yeah, so I think, again, this is an evolution approach because typically I think police training has been practitioners teaching practitioners about what practitioners know about practice. This is fine, but for me, all you enter into is a wheel cycle and you maintain exactly the same knowledge throughout that cycle and exactly the same position. Teaching, I suppose, done in front of a PowerPoint about how to do something is very different to teaching done by experience, which helps a person understand the broader concepts and move forward. So I suppose in Cumbria, one of the things that we've done is through partnership with obviously the AOCPP and other universities is to understand our training efficacy. So when we train a person to do something, do they apply this in practice? And if not, what are the barriers to that application? Is it the time that they've got to implement that particular skill? Is it that they don't understand it? Is it that the hierarchy or the senior people in the police don't believe in it, so they discredit what is happening? Which brings me on to the next point, really, that obviously as interviewing has evolved, you have various tiers of interviewers. And if you have a very small pool of specialist people who have senior positions, this is not as good as having a broad understanding amongst many senior professionals, including partnerships, you know, because that is an important part of it. Police officers shouldn't be existing in a practice leading practice interview cycle. They should be informed by other areas, as you mentioned before, for safeguarding from children's social care and all this kind of stuff, or adult social care, because they might know how to do something better. And not just better, but their information that they might be able to tell you about a person might then inform how you actually interview them. So interviewing practices cannot exist in isolation to other professional disciplines or research. And that's the approach, really, that we're trying to take in Cumbria, obviously, with the association with the AOCPP, with involving universities, and particularly master students, in evaluating what we're doing and bringing in specialist guest speakers and lecturers to help our staff understand what it is that they're doing.
Mm. That's really helpful, Rob. And I'm really taken with the approach that you have around, you know, recognising that systemic and organisational need for support as well. That sounds really, really positive. So it's not just left to the people on the ground. It's actually the whole organisation that takes that approach. So you've talked about using research, using other professional perspectives. That sounds really interesting. So what would, from your perspective, what would you call an evidence-based interviewing approach? What does that look like, an evidence-based interviewing approach?
I'm going to actually take a lead here from something I heard recently, which is by a professor called Larry Sherman, who's done lots of work around evidence-based policing, particularly around policing hotspots. But he has a phrase that evidence-based policing is getting things just right, hitting that sweet spot between an application of knowledge in research terms, that evaluation picture which I mentioned before, and also that application into practice. And you've also got to be able to measure this. And this is something that traditionally in police training, or I suppose in all training, sometimes we don't do. We evaluate whether we think the person who's on the course has had a good time or not, but we don't necessarily look forward at whether that skill has been applied. So an evidence-based policing approach in interviewing is incredibly important, because what you really want to know is, okay, you've been on this course for 2 weeks or whatever. What have you changed? What have you implemented? How have you implemented that? Has it worked? And this goes back to obviously what Professor Sherman describes as this sweet spot in evidence-based policing, but it's an important point to, I suppose, acknowledge that constantly evolving picture of feedback. And of course, you're using the best available evidence. If somebody has done a trial, which is of, you know, a high status, and it proves that something works, that is the evidence that it works. And if I talk about hotspots policing, there's some interesting research that says actually police practitioners sometimes don't identify the most appropriate spot for hotspot patrols, but analysts do. And I guess this is because you have a really focused idea from data. And for me, we should be able to do that through researching our own interviews.
That's really interesting. I think the idea of learning being reflective, which I think you're describing really well, people applying that knowledge and then reflecting on how it's impacted is absolutely crucial in terms of an ongoing developing practitioner. Yeah. Fantastic to hear. Rob, what learning from good interviewing practices do you think our listeners can take away with them, you know, from whatever sector of child protection or adult safeguarding they work in?
The first thing, and it's interesting that you mentioned reflection, I would argue that you can come into this line of work through any level of experience. And if you come in with a fixed idea and mindset about a certain population, and you ignore the ideas of anyone else because your idea is correct, despite your limited experience, this will not serve you well in interviewing. Every interview is different. Every interview is a unique challenge of problem solving, which should be approached in that way. Every child is different. Particularly thinking about my own research, if you identify someone as vulnerable, that's great. But what is vulnerable about them? Define what we mean by this. If you identify someone as having autism, not all autistic people are the same. So not all interviews can be the same, and not all interviews should be approached in the same way. This is the importance of planning, good briefing structures, working with partners. And at the heart of that is the practitioner, the interviewer, being able to reflect on all of those experiences so that the next time they either do it better, slightly differently, or adopt a unique approach, which should be adopted in all interviews, to, I guess, try and make sure that the interview is as effective as possible. Obviously, we have these sort of achieving best evidence frameworks, and that's great. But what do you define as best evidence? How do you say this evidence here was gathered in a better way than this evidence? I don't think there is a unique or a pinnacle standard to this. You should approach each interview uniquely and reflect each time. And I guess These practices, particularly in our newer officers, where we have a lot more academic involvement in our training, reflection for them starts from the moment they join. Mm. What we need to do now is to educate, I guess, professionals who have not been exposed to that level of the importance of reflection, importance of reflective training, educate those professionals to take on board these sort of reflective elements of their work.
Yeah, that's really helpful to hear, Rob, because of course the police training has undergone radical changes the last few years. So hopefully from what you're describing, that sort of reflective practice and approach, and indeed research skills approach, will be part and parcel of all police training going forward. Thanks for that. Rob, Cumbria Police have recently joined the association as a partner and organisational member. Why was it so important to you to become an AOCPP member?
Yeah, so we've obviously involved various different academics in our training at various different levels, from what we would define as tier three, which is, I guess you would call it a specialist level of knowledge in relation to interviewing, and tier five, which is an advisory element to interviewing. The problem becomes when you invite these specialisms to these courses is, what about the people who are not exposed to this? And what about the people who do interviews day in and day out, experience the same challenges, don't need to go on the course, but need to have that level of continued professional development in the area of interviewing? My training team deliver interviewing at various different levels, from when people enter the organization, when they come back for that first course, when they do this tier three course, tier five, or whatever. So this means that all of those people involved need to be on the same page, not just the people who attend a specialist course, not just the people who have a particular interest in it, but all of those people together need to be singing from exactly the same hymn sheet, as it were. So if you enter the organization, you get told, or you are informed of a good practice idea that is either repeated, evolved, or otherwise in other areas. So the AOCPP has, I guess, a comprehensive level of CPD for these people who are allied to the training commitment of those specialist people. So those wider group of people who benefit from knowledge and experience that used to be brought into those specialist courses, that knowledge and experience and that continued professional development is relevant to that wider scheme of people. The other thing is, obviously from the AOCPP, they do these focus groups. And this is, for me, if I go back to my idea from before of sweet spots, this is a real sweet spot for training, because this is about broadening people's horizons to different possibilities and opportunities. And if you are a trainer and you've evolved a certain level of practice, perhaps that practice might actually be a good thing. And perhaps that different way of looking things is a good thing for another group of people. And the AOCPP help develop that by these sort of wider interest group sessions. And this is much more than CPD. And there's obviously, you know, people can have sort of discounts and conferences and these kinds of things, which are a great way to develop yourselves. Wider than this, I think the membership that we're offering here in Cumbria is to those people who are involved in the training, so we get this consistent level and approach. And also that wider pool of people who are doing these interviews day in and day out that perhaps in the past weren't touched by CPD. The police has a terrible, I suppose, reputation for what I would call passive courses, where you turn up, and providing you've turned up and you listen and you develop and all this kind of stuff on the course, you get a certificate and you leave. That one-touch approach is okay for some things, but in my view, it's not okay for interviewing, because interviewing is a constantly evolving field, and the people involved in it need to have that constantly evolving picture. And that, for me, is why memberships like this are very important.
That's great to hear, Rob. And you're absolutely right. The special interest groups that the AOCPP runs have proved fantastically popular with the membership because of that very reason. They are multidisciplinary. People are coming from different perspectives to bring their experience and share that and take things away and have their own experience and practice validated as well. So that's really positive to hear that. So last question, Rob. What do you think the specific challenges police forces like yours are facing at the moment? And what do you believe ought to be done or challenged or changed about that?
100%, the biggest challenge is culture. Investigation, good interviewing is not quick. It's not cheap. And it certainly can't be done on a whim. Sometimes our students face, I suppose, archaic levels of or archaic sort of disciplines, which, you know, it might have existed in the 1980s, but they have no place in modern day culture. If you set out in an investigation trying to prove that somebody is guilty instead of searching for the truth or searching for facts that happen, that to me is not a good level of practice and culture. If you believe that an investigation can be a complex investigation, this is can be done quickly, you know, this is the wrong culture and approach to have. We know that the people who are often harmed the most suffer years of trauma, and I don't propose that any investigation takes years, but I do propose that there is a diligent level of activity around that. But definitely this, I think now people want results quicker. Some people believe that if they report something to the police on the Monday, then they'll have a result by the Friday and they'll be in court on the Tuesday. This doesn't happen. And I think sometimes for some investigations, it's a good thing that it isn't quick, providing obviously there's that level of detail to support that. Culture as well. I mean, in policing, we have a very young, less experienced frontline workforce. And I don't mean young in terms of age. I mean young in experience. And that can be a challenge sometimes because people perhaps don't realise the significance of what they're embarking on. Investigations can have significant impact on people's lives, either positively, negatively or otherwise. And police officers and other allied professionals have a real role in that. But leadership sets the tone. Leadership sets what the culture is. So if we want to start changing this culture, we need to have good leaders who are emboldened in evidence-based practice and ideas and really can understand the intricacies of that relationship between academia, practice, professional experience, and realize that this is not a one-horse race. There are others who are equally as important.
That's really helpful, Rob. And I think it'll resonate with listeners today about the learning that people can take away, whatever their professional background is, around interviewing, around you know, establishing facts rather than going in with proving a case. Those are real challenges for all of us working in child protection. And like, as you say, underpinned by leadership. And it's just fantastic to hear that the leadership that you're providing in Cumbria Police at the moment. So that's really wonderful to hear. So, Rob, thanks so much for speaking to us today.
You're welcome.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. And to members listening, if you'd like to find out more about Rob and Cumbria Police, you can find their details in the show notes. Otherwise, thank you for listening to the Association of Child Protection Professionals podcast and see you at the next episode. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the AOCPP's podcast. If there are any specific topics you want discussed in future episodes, email us at hello@aocpp.org.uk. And if you would like more information about the Association of Child Protection Professionals, then visit our website at childprotectionprofessionals.org.uk. Thank you.